Full Story is supported by AMP Super. There are moments in life where everything shifts. A new job, a new home, a new direction. But those same moments can also shape your future. AMP calls these super moments. Times to check in on your super. And with 24/7 digital financial advice, AMP Super helps you make more confident decisions as your situation changes. Search AMP Super Moments to find out more. AMP Super. Built for life's super moments. AMP Super, issued by NM Superannuation Proprietary Limited. See PDS and TMD on amp.com.au and consider what's right for you.
I'm Graham Harrison. You're The Guardian's chief Middle East correspondent based in Jerusalem. Welcome to Today in Focus. Today we're here to talk about this new law that has been passed in Israel that will mean that Palestinian prisoners charged with involvement in the October 7th attacks could now face the death sentence. But this is actually the second piece of legislation about the death penalty passed in Israel in recent months. So can we start by you telling me about the law that was passed by the Knesset in March and how this has laid the groundwork for what we're seeing now?
So the law that was passed in March is frankly horrifying. It's fundamentally racist. It's basically aimed only at Palestinians because it instigates the death penalty for people convicted of deadly terrorism with an intent to deny the existence of the State of Israel. So essentially, it's almost impossible to imagine a scenario in which, for instance, a Jewish Israeli convicted of terrorism against Palestinians would face the death penalty. And then it has provisions that are extremely disturbing. So in occupied Palestine, people will be tried in military courts. They can be convicted and face the death penalty on the decision of a majority of judges. There doesn't have to be unanimity. It's a default penalty as a sort of concession to people who were concerned about a mandatory death penalty. There is a provision that it could be commuted to life in prison under special circumstances, but those aren't defined. There's no provision for judges to be able to issue a pardon, and it has to be imposed within 90 days. So, you know, if you think about how long it can take for miscarriages of justice to work their way through any judicial system, this isn't about Israel's judicial system in particular, false convictions take decades to come to light. And then even inside Israel, where it would be applied in civilian courts, so there would be different provisions, you still have this racist component that it's aimed primarily at Palestinians. And it's still been really heavily criticized. So basically, as soon as it was passed, we saw a whole range of Israeli human rights groups filing suit in the Supreme Court to have it thrown out.
Relatives of Palestinian prisoners and activists staged a sit-in in front of the headquarters of the International Committee of the Red Cross. There was also condemnation from the EU and human rights groups who say the punishment discriminates against Palestinians.
And it should be said, it had a clear majority. It was supported by 62 lawmakers, which is a very thin majority. 48 voted against it and one abstained. I mean, it did pass, but it was still contentious.
When the law was passed, there were also just the most incredible scenes coming out of the Knesset. The jubilation from the far-right Israeli National Security Minister, Ben-Gavir in particular, who I think at the time the law was passed was wearing a badge with a noose, displaying his support for the death penalty for Palestinians. They were so striking, just done so openly.
There's one thing to argue for the death penalty as the part of a judicial system, to argue that it's a deterrent, although lots of evidence shows it's not. That is not what Ben-Gavir is doing. Ben-Gavir seems to be sort of celebrating, really, a sort of culture of execution.
So, Emma, on the one hand, you've got this law concerning the death penalty passed back in March. But then earlier this month, Israel passed this legislation that looks like it deals specifically with Palestinians accused of participating in the October 7th attacks. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so this is a new law that sets up tribunals. So what's new is not the law or the sort of details of the crimes. It's the way in which people accused of taking part in October 7th are going to be put on trial. And it sets up these essentially military tribunals that have raised concern among human rights advocates here because they do away with or scale back a lot of provisions that are considered pretty integral to a fair trial. So these tribunals, they create special military courts to try people accused of committing crimes on October 7th and against hostages who were held in Gaza. Judges will be appointed by the military for fixed terms, which, you know, raises concerns about judicial independence. They can change rules of procedure and evidence in order to expedite the trials and protect victims and survivors. Obviously, you can understand the concern that people who've lived through the atrocities on October 7th or through captivity, you know, should be protected. But doing that at the cost of justice is a big concern. There's a default that defendants don't have to be present themselves in court so that they can participate by video. Even that can be waived. So essentially, they're bringing in the death penalty while relaxing the heightened due process that was in place in existing Israeli legislation for any potential case that could end with a death sentence, although the people may well have been involved in atrocities.
And you said that it was the military that were appointing the judges, is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
Right, so essentially it is the Israeli Defense Forces, the Israeli military, who are effectively deciding who gets to preside over these tribunals.
Yeah. And I mean, the argument for that was that it would be more efficient. And I think, you know, people I've spoken to have said that in itself is worrying because, again, there's huge need and demand for justice, for accountability. People who lost their loved ones, who were injured, who were taken captive nearly 3 years ago now, want to know what happened, want the people who committed these atrocities to be held accountable. But the worry is that if you do it in a context where the judicial process isn't the priority, you actually won't end up with real justice, with real accountability.
Could you just tell us how many people are currently stand accused of crimes related to October the 7th who could be passing through these tribunals?
So there's 300 to 400 Palestinians from Gaza who are currently being held on suspicion of some involvement in the atrocities on October 7th. The law setting up these tribunals specifically allows for mass trials. You know, adding to concerns about the nature of these tribunals is the fact that they're going to be, or at least parts of the proceedings are going to be live streamed. And so there's real concern that that is going to be taken by a government to create a national narrative. A criminal trial is meant to provide justice, but it's also meant to clarify what happened on a particular day and who did it. And the concern of people I've spoken to who very much back the urgent call for accountability for people to be put on trial, their concern is that these aren't going to end up with real accountability, with real justice. That, you know, you might come out of them with people found guilty and even being executed, but they might not be the people who actually committed the crimes. And that's potentially exacerbated by the fact that there's not that much forensic evidence. I mean, for very understandable reasons, you know, the areas where these atrocities were committed were an active war zone. The priority was saving lives, reestablishing control, things like that. So you have a lot of video evidence. You have sort of signals intelligence that people were in the area at the time. But the question of tying individuals to specific crimes, you know, that's something that potentially is going to be harder to prove. And, you know, if you have defendants not in court, it's also unclear how they're going to be represented because the government said they won't be able to access the public defender system. So you're going to have people facing the death penalty without defense lawyers. You know, that's another big question sort of hanging over the prospect of this. The law for these tribunals was passed unanimously in the Knesset, 93 votes in favour, none against.
Not one objection. 93 Israeli MPs voted in favour of establishing a special military tribunal to prosecute Palestinians from Gaza accused in Hamas's October 7th attacks.
Israel.
An unusual united front among the parliament's 120 members.
One of the people I spoke to who's the head of a leading Israeli human rights organization called the Public Committee Against Torture, Sari Bashi, who's a lawyer herself. She described these tribunals as basically a new mechanism that will fast-track show trials leading to mass executions and based on confessions extracted under torture. And that's a pretty devastating prospect.
You've done a lot of reporting on conditions for Palestinians inside prison. Can you just tell us a bit about what your reporting discovered?
Yeah, so, I mean, I should say, first of all, this isn't just my reporting. These horrific conditions have been documented by a broad range of journalists, human rights groups, investigators. The Israeli-Palestinian human rights group, B'Tselem, says that Israel's prisons should be called torture camps, where torture has become systemic, and that includes sexualized violence. I myself have interviewed a man who said he had survived rape. He gave a very detailed and credible account of what had happened to him. The Israeli prison service denied that. But that is not an isolated account, which is why, you know, B'Tselem and other organizations say that they are credible. We hear these repeated patterns of behavior. And, you know, torture produces false confessions. That's something that's universally known. So conditions in the prisons are horrific. There's complete impunity for abusing Palestinian prisoners. We know of around 100 prisoners who died in detention. The number's probably higher. So people are being tortured. They're emerging from prison emaciated. They're on starvation rations. The government has been repeatedly told by the Israeli Supreme Court that it needs to increase rations to prisoners because they are being starved and has not done so. The security minister, Ben-Gvir, has boasted of keeping people on starvation rations. So, you know, that's just another layer of concern, really, about these trials, that you will be putting people on trial who have been tortured, potentially using confessions extracted under torture.
And what has been the reaction from the public to the news of these tribunals?
Well, you know, that's a good question, Annie, because I think on the one hand, you know, broadly speaking, people are very keen to see justice done. But at the same time, you know, we've seen a long sustained campaign by members of the public, survivors, relatives of people who were killed for an independent commission of inquiry into October 7th. And the government's blocking that. They're saying that they're going to set up their own commission of inquiry, but it won't have the same independence, it won't have the same power to summon witnesses. And I think, you know, in a way, the questions about these tribunals go to the same question. You know, the government says this is about justice, but critics would say, actually, this is not about real justice, about real accountability, about truly finding out what happened on October 7th, who committed these crimes against humanity, and who directed them, and the failings on the Israeli side that left so many thousands of Israelis vulnerable. In some ways, these trials feel to many people long overdue. It's been so long since these things happened now, over 2.5 years. It's not been a question that they've been trying to find the suspects. They've been in captivity all this time. But at the same time, there is definitely a feeling among many Israelis that this is a government that's putting its own interests before those of victims, survivors, and long-term national security, actually, because if you don't understand properly what went wrong, how can you be sure you stop it happening again?
So, right, you've got these two new laws that have been passed recently. One in March that effectively brought in the death penalty in Israel, and this other one in May that set up these tribunals around October the 7th. But how are they linked exactly?
Well, you know, I mean, in one sense, you could say they're very different. One is looking back. It's setting up these tribunals under the framework of existing Israeli law. The other is looking forward and setting up a new legal regime, a new set of statutes under which the death penalty can be handed down. But in another way, they're very, very intimately linked as really part of a legal move to essentially re-establish the death penalty inside Israel, but only for Palestinians. both parts of that are important to sort of think about and understand. The first is, you know, in Israel's entire history, there have only been two executions. The first was a soldier who was executed very shortly before he was exonerated. So that was a wrongful execution, I think, in 1949, the very beginning of Israel's existence as a state. And then in 1962, you had the execution of one of the most prominent Nazis, Eichmann, you know, Hannah Arendt wrote a famous book about the trial, Eichmann in Jerusalem. And since then, Israel has essentially had a de facto moratorium on the death penalty. And that's not just been a decision not to implement it. For 60 years, Israel has been in the camp of countries that really don't use capital punishment. So with these two laws, we've seen Israel firstly overturn its own long-standing position, really, of being against capital punishment, of reserving it essentially for this one criminal who was responsible for, you know, what Israeli lawyers have called a sort of historic injustice, you know, the Holocaust. And then also in applying it in a racist way, because, you know, the tribunals for October 7th, those atrocities were carried out by Palestinians from Gaza, so that's only going to be Palestinians on trial. And then with the law that was passed in March, in a sort of, you could say, legislatively racist way, you have a death penalty which essentially only applies to Palestinians because it's for deadly terrorist attacks, but only when the perpetrator is considered to have an intent to deny the existence of the State of Israel.
Coming up, can anything change Israel's culture of impunity?